Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL, joined by the great Mike Wall. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Wall68. Great to be talking with you again, Mike. Thanks so much for joining, and excited to pick your brain on what was a very interesting Packers-Jaguars game.
Yeah, it certainly was. 30-27, one of the teams scored as many points as I thought they would. The other one did a little bit better. I think the over-under was like 49.5. You know, it's these games shouldn't come down to last-minute heroics by your backup quarterback, but at the same time, this is one of the most confusing, I think, offensive teams I've ever watched. Because first of all, you're winning these bad games, you don't apologize for winning ugly. Let's start off with that. I think this was winning ugly to me. It's not a good Jaguars football team. Like I was hoping that Doug Peterson didn't get fired after this game, so I'm glad he didn't.
Yep.
You kind of thought that was the trajectory he was going to go. But this team offensively, it's funny, like you watch them, and if you watch this just frame by frame, play by play, you're like, not a really exciting day. And then you turn around, it's like, oh, you got 170 yards rushing, you got 30 points, 300 yards on the board. It's like a pretty good damn day, you know? And it, for whatever reason, I think it's really just has a lot to do with the way that Matt LaFleur's scheme works. There's just a lot in the way that Josh Jacobs runs. There's just a lot of hidden yardage that maybe doesn't get accounted for at first look.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm excited to kind of break this all down with you. We'll go kind of, let's go good news, bad news first. Let's start with the good news from Packers Jaguars. As you kind of went back and watched the tape, what was something that you looked at in this game and said, you know what, I really liked what I saw here, and this could be something that is workable moving forward, and I feel confident, or I feel good about what happened in this game?
This is the first time that I think Josh Jacobs took over the mantle of, okay, guys, you can ride my coattails to a victory. This is the first time I think I saw that. I mean, he's been playing really well all year, but this time, like, his jump cuts were just extra special this weekend. And I just think he was not the lone bright spot by any means for the Packers, but he really shone in this game. And it was a situation where you bring in your backup quarterback, they're going to start running the ball exclusively. The Jaguars know it. And he just made, as he has all year, I suppose, but he just made a lot of chicken salad this weekend and did such a good job of making people miss in the hole, making people miss at second level. His acceleration is great. He just runs so hard. Like there's a play in the game where he takes it off left tackle, cuts inside of 51, makes a miss, and then bangs around, spins twice, and gets like, he just got like two or three more yards. You know, it's not like, it wasn't a touchdown, but it's two or three or more yards. He does that like on every damn play. And it starts adding up over the course of the game. So I really like that. Obviously, you really like the way that Tucker Kraft continues to develop. The long play was great. That, you know, it was fantastic. He got 25 yards after first contact. He gets the easy touchdown. But I really like what he does in the blocking game in particular. And then, you know, 2 weeks removed from Romeo Doubs. I know I'm just talking about offense. But 2 weeks removed from Romeo Doubs, you know, not being able to play for whatever reason. His second or really good football game. And again, he seemed like the guy right now in this moment. Maybe it was Jaden Reed at the beginning of the year, but right now in this moment, he seems like the guy. If you need to get some tough yardage, if you need to make a play happen, isolate him, put him in a situation to be successful, and he continues to find success. So I think at least offensively, that was a really high-level game for all three of those guys.
Yeah, I really like what Romeo Doubs was able to accomplish in this game. And I do feel like he is becoming a little bit more of a go-to, and especially in some of those clutch situations. And he continues to be very strong with his hands and just kind of making some of those clutch plays. And I do think that's hopefully something that they can continue to go to. I do think this wide receiver room is going to, you know, continue to be a week by week, where 1 week it might be Watson, 1 week it might be Doubs, and next it might be Reed. But the fact that they feel comfortable going to Doubs in those situations, and I think rightfully so, I think he's going to still be a huge part of this offense. And I love the way that he has responded since coming back from the suspension.
Yeah, the definition of roles will probably continue to develop really over the course of the next couple of years. But you can kind of, you know, if you were to watch these guys in training camp over the last couple of years, you watch them in college, you probably have a pretty good idea of what they're good at. And what happens in the National Football League is that has to kind of mesh with what quarterback likes to do, obviously what defenses are presenting you with. And I think Matt LaFleur has turned himself into one of the top five coordinators, play callers in the league, if not higher than that. And he just does such a good job of putting people in positions to be successful. And what you really like to see is there's kind of a theme for all these different weeks. There was the orbit, there was the reverse orbit, there was the double in the backfield with the motion across. And we've seen all of it in different variations, but there's kind of a theme every week that he likes to harp on a little bit and just get it helps him get a real good read for what the defense is trying to do. I'm really enjoying, there's a couple teams you really just enjoy watching. I think for the last couple of years, Shanahan's offense in San Francisco, for a number of reasons, is just really entertaining to watch. Certainly what Ben Johnson's doing with the talent up in Detroit is really entertaining to watch. And as perplexing sometimes as the Green Bay Packers are, from a talent standpoint, from an ingenuity standpoint, speaking particularly about the play caller, you know, I'm not usually a fan of who's calling plays, but they're turning me into fans here of who's calling plays. I really like what Matt LaFleur is able to do with this level of talent. And quite frankly, I'm a huge O-line guy. This O-line is you would say they're above average. They're good. I don't know anybody would say that they're great, but they got 170 yards rushing this week. So, I mean, feather in the cap is anything over 100, 125 maybe in the NFL this year. And they're, you know, tops of the league or darn near in rushing. And you're just kind of going, that is a real testament to what Matt LaFleur and the staff has been able to do, not only up front, but just schematically putting people in positions to be successful.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think a huge testament to that too is when your starting quarterback goes down and you're down by four and momentum seems to be in the favor of Jacksonville and they still find ways to obviously run the ball. And like you said, Josh Jacobs just kind of took that game over and put the ball in my hands, I'll take care of it. But then also being able to come up with some plays from Malik Willis, and really his only incompletion was a drop by Romeo Doubs that he had right over, you know, over the middle. It was just
that
a perfect
heat on it though.
Yes, he did.
That had some heat on it.
Oh yeah. I'm willing to give Dobbs some forgiveness on that one for sure. But either way, like everything was open. Everything was there for Willis. And I think that's another testament to what he's able to do. Obviously, it wasn't a perfect game though. So as you kind of went back and watched this game, what's something that maybe gives you a little bit of, you know, cause for concern as you get ready for Detroit this upcoming week and maybe going into the remainder of the season?
Well, a couple things. First of all, we have to be – you're not going to turn over the football and win a lot of games. I think that's just, you know, an obvious statement. We got really lucky to turn the ball over down near the goal line. And then, you know, Kenny has another pick for the year and turns that around quickly. The inconsistency of, I think offensively, some of the inconsistency of the running game is frustrating because this is turning into, just from a schematic standpoint, there's very rarely a play where I watch and go, oh, they shouldn't be here. Like they're outnumbered, they're outmanned, whatever. Like there's very few plays where you go, okay, we're just gonna have to chalk this one up to an L because they don't have leverage. They usually are in positions to win more often than not. So when they don't, it's normal, but it's also a bit of a head scratch for, you know, somebody who's just kind of knows that part of the game. Defensively, look, this is the team that's clearly struggled in the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Trevor Lawrence has a pretty good day. He turns it around after kind of a slow start. We missed tackles for the first time. When Evan Williams went out, we saw Bullard miss a couple of tackles, have some problems in coverage. It looked like maybe he didn't study the playbook as well because it wasn't starting at safety. I'm not sure, but there was some mistakes made there. I really enjoy watching our box players. I really enjoy watching our linebacker. I think this linebacker room, I don't know who the linebacker coach is, but he should be getting a DC job next year based on the job that he's done elevating the play of that room in particular. So I like so many things that are going on. There's some busted coverages. There's clear, I mean, on the last play of the game, the last series of the game, not to be able to close that out defensively. And really that entire second half, just having some communication errors with some really basic kind of structured movement by the Jacksonville Jaguars, just who's supposed to pick up what in what situation with our different coverages. I think he threw it into triple or quadruple coverage once, and the guy ended up making a fantastic catch. When the reality is, like, you know, your corner's just going to be able to drop. It's really simple, basic football. So I think we're still making some of those mistakes. The guys that are making them are kind of the guys that you would guess that are going to make them, young guys or guys that without as much experience. But it's really difficult to sit here with Hapley's defense and go, I don't like what I'm seeing. They're just sometimes good players make plays, and sometimes you're missing tackles. But again, as compared to the last three seasons, it's like, this is really fun to watch.
Yes, it's so much more aesthetically pleasing, and players are in positions to succeed. Sometimes it doesn't always go your way. Like you said, sometimes the other team gets paid to and makes some plays. And I think we saw that in this game. Thought Lawrence had a pretty good, you know, pretty darn good day overall. Anthony Campanelli, the linebackers coach. And yeah, I think he's done a really fantastic job, especially guys like Eric Wilson, Isaiah McDuffie, Edgerrin Cooper. I think those guys in this game too were really, really good and really fun to watch. And I think he is elevating that room. I want to talk about that linebacker position. What have your thoughts been on Eric Wilson and how he has done filling in for Quay Walker when Quay went down injured 2 weeks ago? And then, of course, he played the entirety of this game at that Mike position.
I thought he's been good all year. I mean, when they put three linebackers, the guy that came in, he hasn't done anything to suggest he's not a starting caliber linebacker for anybody in the National Football League. For me, the way that the style that he plays, the style that Jeff Hafley wants the linebacking room to play, I can't sit here and tell you that Quay Walker is a better fit for the system and the scheme just on based on how style of play and than any of those guys, quite frankly. And I think that's probably what they're running up against in the coaches' room right now, is that they have a guy who's supremely talented. He's 10 pounds heavier, yet faster than everybody, maybe not faster than Cooper, but, you know, just this freak athlete in Quay Walker. But just from a style of play, downhill, aggressive, getting off of blocks, just being physical in the run game, being able to take out guards, those three guys do it at a much higher level, not a little bit higher level, but a much higher level than anybody else on the team. And I quite frankly, you might run into a problem, in particular with Wilson, when Quay comes back. I'm sure they're going to give him the job back because he's a talented guy. He's a first-round draft pick, and that's kind of what happens in the National Football League. But if I was Eric Wilson, I would understand that that's how the game is played. Maybe they'll surprise us here, but I would feel like I certainly earned the right to stay in the starting lineup.
And that's where I kind of wanted to get to, because I totally 1,000% agree. I think Wilson has outplayed Quay Walker. I think all three guys have outplayed Quay Walker. And at like what point does potential and upside not just trump the overall product on the field? And I'm not saying Quay shouldn't have a role or can't play or things like that. It just, to me, having him be the undisputed number one guy that's always on the field no matter what, yeah, and just get that to me, I have a tougher time with. Where, again, just some of the stuff from Eric Wilson this week, you mentioned it, took on a block from a guard, shed it, and went in and helped out with a tackle. Just not seeing that from Quay. There's the play where there's a pitch to the left side. It is a pitcher, it's a run to the left side, one way or the other. And he just goes right through reads it perfectly, goes right through the gap and goes and helps on the tackle on that play. Like, just some of that stuff where he just identifies it and triggers right away and is using those instincts. We just don't see that from Quay. And I'm just like, I love the brand of football that Eric Wilson is playing right now. Hello, friends. We are quickly approaching the halfway point of the regular season already, which seems absolutely absurd to say. But despite time flying by fast, there's still plenty of season left, which means there's plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Now, with Prize Picks, you can make your selections in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. And right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It's guaranteed. Now, of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. In week 9, I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown against Green Bay. Yes, I know we don't want him to do well, but he seemingly always does well against Green Bay. And I'm also going with Christian Watson against Detroit. Finally, I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes to have a huge game against Tampa on Monday Night Football. Now, there are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
For me, knowing that all four of those guys are going to have to get in the ball game, and you're so lucky that you have enough players that can fill these roles, and also that they have done a lot up to this point. They have put in personnel by, or they have been playing positions by personnel. So Cooper comes in, and up until now had come into certain situations. Eric Wilson goes out, maybe McDuffie goes out. So they're trying to, just by personnel groupings, they're trying to identify what's on offense and who do we think is going to be the best on defense to play defense against that particular, that the skill set that they have on the offensive side. If you were going to take anybody and replace Quay Walker in the starting lineup, and I know this is going to sound crazy given the game they had, but it would be Edgerrin Cooper. It's really, quite frankly, if you watch tape, it's a no-brainer. He makes a lot of rookie mistakes. He is literally running the wrong direction in a ton of plays. And listen, when I say this, he was phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal, and he jumps off the screen as far as, like, there's very rarely a player where I got to, like, rewind and look. Is he in fast forward? It's like watching Jahmyr Gibbs for the Lions. Like, is he in fast forward right now? Like, what the hell's going on? He's so much faster than everybody else on the screen, but he does make rookie mistakes. He doesn't always get to his drops. He gets caught staring at the quarterback. Motions can get him mixed up a little bit. So I'm not saying that, you know – how do you say this the right way? He should probably play every play because the upside's better than the downside. You need to learn. But now you have this embarrassment of riches where you've got players that are playing at a higher level than your first-round draft pick from 3 years ago. You need to get him in the game because he needs to be able to function. And quite frankly, a lot of the stuff that they do when they send Wilson or they send McDuffie in the A-gap, well, they're doing that with Quay too, and Quay's pretty good at it. Yeah. You know, and that's actually when he's playing at his highest level. So I think there's situations where you need to just figure out how to work all these guys in. To your point, does that mean that by default Quay is the guy that's in there every single snap? And for me, it's always been a hard no. I think this just confirms it with the play of these three guys in particular last weekend.
Yeah, we're in lockstep on that for sure. Sticking on the defensive side of the ball, I know you talked a little bit about how this defensive line finally got some early pressure in this game. We saw an early pressure from Preston Smith. I think there was one from Gary as well, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But it didn't necessarily stay consistent throughout the course of the game. There were signs, at least. There was a play where LVN and Enagbare collapse and collide at the quarterback at the same time.
Yeah.
But just haven't seen it necessarily consistently enough. What's kind of the next step for this defensive line?
Yeah, it's such a good question. Even the one we're talking about with LV and Barry, the only reason that they get to the quarterback is because the quarterback's 12 yards deep because Brooks pushed the pocket, right? So they're not winning clean. And when you're playing against good quarterbacks in the National Football League, and listen, it's all over the tape in the Lions game. I'm sure we'll get to it later. But if you are showing up in a guy's eyesight kind of within the schedule of his throw, he's just going to get rid of the football. And you have to be able to win in the National Football League while applying. You either have to win like super clean, fast, and can't get out of the way. Or you have to be able to apply some kind of pressure that's not only putting yourself, putting that offensive lineman in a place where the quarterback has nowhere to go. And you saw it early. Preston Smith wins early on the left tackle. The backup for Robinson was in 72. He turns his shoulders. Like, easy win for Preston. Obviously, errant throw, pressures equal picks. So you love that part of it. Rashawn Gary, for the first time in a long time, had this, what I would call like the perfect rush for him. He didn't get a sack on it. He got pressure on a third down. But he really went up at a high angle, forced that guy to get back fast, made him uncomfortable, put his right hand arm out and just tent-poled him, open him up right at the level of the quarterback. So now he can actually make the play on the quarterback. The quarterback, you know, Trevor Lawrence is a great athlete. He evades it and gets, I think, 2 yards, but you know, they don't get the first down. But that's what you need from them all the time. And we always talk about getting to the level and collapsing the pocket. And sometimes they just don't do a good job of that. I think a lot of this that we talked about LB on last week, a lot of this is how they're being taught to rush. Like philosophically, this is what they want to do. I'll tell you what's happening, quite frankly. It's the same reason that you see guys punching the ball out instead of tackling sometimes, peanut punch. Statisticians came along and said that turnovers are the reason that we win and lose ball games, which is true. And so what happened is a lot of guys said, we want to go for the strip sacks, the plays behind the quarterback where they don't see it, because that gives us a better chance of stripping the ball instead of maybe going for the 10-yard loss where you have a much less chance of stripping the ball because the guy's going to see you, or it's going to be more of like a body tackle instead of an tackle on your arm or wrist. And because of that, it's more of a high risk, high reward play where, you know, 90% of the time you might not ever touch the quarterback, but if you get him that one or two times in the game, it could be the difference. And I think philosophically, just as an offensive lineman, like, I'm really happy they do that because it makes our job a lot easier.
Yep.
But from a perspective of somebody who wants to see a team do well and win football games and guys to get stats that they deserve, it's a really hard way to play football. And I think a lot of teams out there are still kind of going with that, like that statistician model instead of what makes the most sense on the field.
I'm trying to think the last time Green Bay had an edge rusher who got around the edge, got behind the quarterback and ripped the ball. I know Kingsley and Igbari against the Titans had a flush on hit, which forced the fumble. But it doesn't feel like they're doing it to that high of a level where you would want to maybe consistently play that way. I'm all for, you know, going for the turnovers, you know, when you have those opportunities. But I think what Matt LaFleur said on the play to Jaden Reed, where it was a calculated risk taking the shot down the field on that play, I think maybe taking some more calculated risks is maybe a little bit more the way to go than maybe playing that way consistently.
Yeah, and you have to remember, like, the teams that have a lot of success doing that do a really good job of pushing the pocket, because the only way that works is if your quarterback, when his foot hits 11 or 12, depending on the drop, he doesn't go anywhere. Like, he's not back up to 9 or 8. Like, if you're back up to 9 or 8, anybody can block the defensive end. What gets difficult is if the quarterback has to stay back because the technique's pushing the pocket, has nowhere to go, then all those plays start happening. So with that kind of rush, you know, everybody says it's a combination of the coverage and the pass rush. Well, within the pass rush, it's also a combination, if you're going to play that way, of pushing the pocket and taking it over the top.
Yeah, I just think there needs to be a more cohesive brand of football, like you said, collapsing the pocket from the inside, getting around on the outside, and just making life a whole heck of a lot more difficult. That's certainly going to be a key against Jared Goff this upcoming week. Just sticking on the defensive side really quick. I know Javon Bullard had a bit of a tough game in this one. What have been your impressions of him overall this season?
Love him. Love watching him play. Love everything he does. Sometimes you come in and you just miss a couple tackles, have a couple bad breaks with, you know, he just bit hard on a couple of things. To be honest, there's like three plays in a row. So he misses the alley tackle, which is just unfortunate. Sometimes you miss. We missed him so many. I mean, Darnell Savage had like 30 of those, like, you know, over the course of 3 years, right? So, I mean, like, people miss that tackle, and it sucks that he missed it. He won't miss it again, hopefully. Then he goes out, and he's the inside receiver. He's on the inside receiver, and the trips look, and they run the two go routes, and they run the out route from the slot. And it's like single safety high. You just look at the play going, like, there's no way anybody could guard this. Like, I think they put him in a really tough position. He's going to start, you know, 12 yards deep. Guy gets a full head of steam. He literally could go anywhere on the field because there's not a safety to be found behind him. And then getting beat on the touchdown. Look, NFL players making NFL plays. He bit pretty hard. Cooper can get further back and help the drop, so at least the guy has to throw it over the top a little bit. Not that he's not going to make the play or not, but, you know, make it a little bit muddy for the quarterback. But sometimes these guys get beaten, and what you always think about with a young player who was penciled in to start there, I think started week one, maybe as the guy at the safety position. And then, you know, the Oregon, Evan Williams comes in, same draft class, probably friends, obviously rivals a little bit. There's got to be a little bit of, oh yeah, well, I'm the nickelback, but I really wanted to be the safety, blah, 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 blah. So you wonder what it looks like sometimes, like, are you as prepared as you would have been if you knew you were going to get the starting role going into the game? I'm not saying that he wasn't. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that is a natural human tendency.
Yeah, you could tell. I mean, whether it was that or not, like you just tell, like maybe he hasn't practiced quite as much at safety as he maybe has in the slot, because that's where he's primarily been playing. And I think there was definitely a domino effect of when Williams went out, and then Bullard's got to go back to safety. Nixon's got to kick back in the slot. You get more Eric Stokes on the outside, and just think all of that really played into it. I'm with you though on Bullard. One of the things I said is like, I just love how fast he plays and how intentional he is. And there's not any falls. Like if he's going to make a mistake, he's going to do it at a million miles per hour. And I just love how that plays. I think overall there's more good that comes out of that than any sort of bad. And to your point, every once in a while, there might be a missed tackle or a play here or there that the other team makes, but I think he's been a very, you know, big net positive for this team so far. And I think he will continue to be moving forward.
When Matt LaFleur came here, and they ripped off a really good season. And when you talk to people inside the building, you say, oh, is the culture change? Like, what's the difference between him and Mike? And it's like, guys would tell me point blank, no, it was Smith. It was Z. Smith Brothers came in and he brought the Baltimore Ravens mentality that they just didn't have. And they made a huge difference on the defense. I would say this year, we could look at Jeff Hafley, certainly. And I think the system that he's put in, and I don't want to take anything away from what he's done, because I think he's done a great job.
Yep.
But the people that are playing the game now are different. I mean, you got some dudes in there that like, Xavier's different. He's just a different – we haven't seen a guy like that in the secondary for a long time. And I'm not going to name any names, because I think the last one was the Hall of Fame. Right? But he's that kind of talented guy. You've got two rookies that are not playing like rookies. I mean, these are really going to be really, really dominant players. I've said it before. You know, the one reminds me of Fitzpatrick. I mean, just from a movement standpoint, he's got that kind of talent. You've got an all-pro at corner. You've got a linebacker room with Edger and Cooper now making splash plays, if not leading the room. But you've got a room that is – I don't even know what multiple of better they are now than they were a year ago. But it's a multiple better of what the production was. And so the people that you have playing for you, not just from a talent on the field standpoint, but like you can just tell the confidence that goes around, especially like you look at that DB room, like, man, I bet you they have a lot of fun in that room.
Oh yeah. I can guarantee it. Now I have to ask you though. I know you don't want to name names. I have to ask you, Xavier McKinney or Nick Collins?
Oh, Xavier McKinney. So I love Nick Collins too, man. I mean, Nick Collins, especially, you know, the game he got hurt, boy, he was a stud. I mean, just but oh, different kind of player though, right? Like Nick Collins, when I see Nick, I feel like if Nick Collins and Xavier McKinney were walking on the sidewalk and they were walking next to each other, I feel like Nick would have him by like 2 inches and like 25 pounds. Like Nick Collins, just I just remember him being an absolute monster.
Yeah.
Like not quite like Cam Chancellor monster, but just an absolute monster. But yeah, he was, I forgot about Nick. He was a good player. Packers Hall of Famer though. I mean, really, really good player. He's probably the guy that if he gets his 12, 13 years in the game, you're probably talking about him differently.
I think
he's that kind of talent.
I think if he finished his career and if he could have hung on to a couple more of those interceptions that would have a tendency to bounce off of his hands a couple times, we would be talking to him. I honestly think we'd be talking about him as a Hall of Famer, because he found a way like every single game to like get his hand, like somehow jump a play. And like, unfortunately he would have a propensity to drop some of those, but had he had the longevity and just hung on to a couple more of those picks, I think we talk about him as a Hall of Famer. Hey everyone. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the global leader in men's lifestyle and grooming. Every man knows the unbeatable feeling of a fresh barbershop shave. Now, what if I told you that you no longer have to wait weeks or even months between appointments to experience it? Introducing Manscaped's newest innovation, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver, the game-changing tool that brings the luxury of a professional shave right into your home. Now, whether you're after that daily silky smooth finish, or if you prefer to maintain a rugged 5 o'clock shadow, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver is your go-to for precision and style every time. So head over to manscaped.com and join over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. I still remember going through high school and college with a crappy razor and showing up to class with toilet paper stuck to my face and trying to stop. It was an absolute nightmare. It was not a good scene. I only wish I had a Chairman Pro when I was younger. And here's the thing. The Chairman Pro isn't just for daily shaves either. It's powerful enough to tackle up to a 5-day growth, making it perfect whether you're shaving every day or just tidying up after a few days. And with up to 75 minutes of runtime on a single charge, you can take your time getting the perfect shave. So you can get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. So get 20% off and free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com.
You know, it's funny you talk about, like, when a player thinks about who a Hall of Fame player is, the criteria is actually, it's really, really simple, I think. Over the course of your career, do you have to game plan for this individual? Right? And that can be at the quarterback position, because believe it or not, I mean, you can go in and look at quarterbacks that are in the national, they're in the Hall of Fame, and we didn't game plan for them. That wasn't a concern. But you look at all the really critical guys, and it could be any game. I mean, Larry Allen, you had a game plan for Larry Allen. He played left guard. I mean, Steve Hutchinson, the guys of my generation that are Hall of Fame caliber players, I don't know that you're game planning for those guys, but you certainly have at least a half a period dedicated to, like, okay, we got a real problem if this guy gets going downhill, you know, because he's gonna hurt somebody. So Nick was that kind of player for sure.
Loved watching him play. Now, not to rabbit hole this completely, but I know there's always the conversation out there that the numbers would very much say he is not, but David Bakhtiari, Hall of Famer. Yes or no?
See, I think David Bakhtiari was a top, I'll say three just to be safe, because he might be two.
Yep.
But I'll say top three tackle for at least five seasons in a row.
Yep.
So that's a Hall of Famer to me.
If you look at,
a no brainer.
So Pro Football Reference.
I've always said he's a Hall of Famer, to be honest with you. Now I'm thinking about it. Like, when he was playing, so I go, guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So
he's not in the Hall of Fame. Who's in the Hall of Fame? Is it reserved?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
I mean, if David Bakhtiari in the last let's say 15 years, aside from Trent Williams, okay,
yep,
who's had a better 15 years or whatever the number was, or 5 year stretch or 7 year stretch than David Bakhtiari? Who's better than he was?
I will 1,000,000% agree. I will know that the NFL will look at it and they'll see three-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro, and that's all he was. Like, not an All-Decade.
Yeah, they're idiots.
I know. I'm not arguing on that at all. I just think that they're going to look at it from a longevity standpoint and say three-time Pro Bowler only, two-time All-Pro, and say that's not going to meet this standard. And if you look at, like, Pro Football Reference has like a Hall of Fame predictor of, like, based on, like, those sort of things, like, it's not even, like, remotely in the conversation, which it sucks. I'm not disagreeing, but he was phenomenal.
So Andrew Thomas has an All-Pro under his belt. The guy from the Denver Broncos, who's, like, they're good players, by the way.
Yep. Okay? Garrett Bowles, is it?
He has an All-Pro. Like, huh?
Is it Garrett Bowles? Are we talking about from the Broncos?
Yeah, Bowles. Yeah, he was an All-Pro. Like, okay. Like, maybe we should just turn on tape and let tape guys decide every once in a while, because some of this stuff is, it's like the Ballon d'Or that's another conversation. Anyway.
Totally my fault for derailing it. But I was trying to see if I could find the Hall of Fame predictor really quick here. I guess it's not terrible. They have Bakhtiari as a 49% chance of making the Hall of Fame based on numbers. So it's not terrible, but they have them. So, like, they have them well below a lot of guys who have not made the Hall of Fame at that position.
I too.
So, all right. So they have, well, this is an interesting one. They have Tyron Smith as a likely 76% likelihood. Trent Williams. Trent Williams, 71%. That should be a no brainer. 71?
That's 100%.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. Yeah.
So right now your model is completely invalid.
Of course.
The two guys you just mentioned are surefire Hall of Famers. Trent Williams is the best lineman of this generation.
They have Joe Staley ahead of him. I'd disagree with that. I don't know how you feel.
Joe Staley.
Yeah. I would have Bakhtiari over him.
That is not close.
Andrew Whitworth.
So, okay, here's something interesting about Andrew Whitworth. Andrew Whitworth is on there because he's on TV right now. Andrew Whitworth was so good on a bad team. He only played guard for 8 years, right?
I did not realize he played guard for eight years.
Yeah, he started his career. I don't know if it was 8 years, but he started his career guard for a long time for the Bengals. He played guard. They moved him out to tackle. I think Whitworth is – see, this is where it gets interesting, because if Whitworth's not in the Hall of Fame, Bakhtiari's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Because the problem with those guys is you get paid on your pass sets, you get famous on your run blocking. Right, so Trent Williams is not famous. Larry Allen's not famous because they were good pass pro guys, which they were, but they're famous because people are afraid they'll get hurt if they play against them. And none of those other guys you're talking about, nobody really feels that way about them. So maybe that's a reason why. But just strictly from a production standpoint, I mean, you could watch any number of Bakhtiari games, and I did this once with Ross Verba. We sat down and watched a game with Tony Baselli was playing for Jacksonville.
Yep.
And we sat down and watched the game. And, you know, you're doing kind of your little, like, okay, that was a good play or that wasn't a good play on your thing. And we watched the entire game, and Ross looked over and he goes, bro, I didn't have one minus on there. And I go, I didn't have one minus either. And we had never even seen that before. Like, that wasn't possible as far as we were concerned. So there's some dudes out there like that. And I think Bakhtiari, I think if you go back and watch about any random 10 games of his in the last 5 years, awesome. I bet you he's damn near perfect.
He was just the most consistent. It was like, it was machine-like, where like just the same pass set, same technique every single time, hands, just like his overall foot. Like, it was one of by far and away one of my favorite players to watch from a technical standpoint, game in and game out. I would put him in there. No question about it. I unfortunately don't think he gets the nod, but maybe he can find his way back in the league and have a couple more strong seasons and maybe even, at a handset at some point.
If he goes on Pitch Perfect 4 or whatever, it's probably a shoo-in.
There you go. That's all or just gets on TV, right? That's all you need to do too. Just get on CBS Sports or something. All right, a couple other quick ones. Speaking of offensive tackle, thoughts on Rashid Walker and maybe a couple of his struggles as of late?
I think that he's playing at his level.
Okay.
I think this is. I think he's playing at his level. I think this is what you have, and I think that for the Packers right now, he's good enough to win ball games with. Certainly, we're just you know, referencing one of the best to do it in green and gold. I mean, he's certainly not that, but right. I do think that he's a good player. There's a reason that you're drafted in certain rounds sometimes, right? And there's some limitations that come along with that physically. And I think his physical limitations are they're going to be, they are. I think there's a lot of good that comes with him. Certainly, but I think for me, he's not doing anything kind of out of character for what you think he's going to do over the courses of his career. And that's not to put him down, because I think he's been a nice surprise and he plays quite well. But if he has a couple slip ups in there, I think it's just going to happen.
That's totally fair. I like Rashid Walker. I think he's a really good player. I still think there's maybe something. I thought at the second half of last year, he played better than what he's been playing in the first half of this year so far. But I think there's probably something to what you're saying of like, this kind of is who he is. And you're still certainly good enough to win with him at left tackle. And I'm a big Rashid Walker guy, so I'm right there with you. Last but not least, Packers Lions. What are you looking forward to in this matchup this week?
The Lions are fun to watch.
They are.
So the Lions are one of those. I just doing something else. I said, you know, the Lions remind me of watching Peyton Manning with the Colts. Not because of the quarterback play, but because the Colts used to be like number one in offense and defense. And I think the Lions are like first in like eighth. But when you watch the defense, you go, I mean, they're missing Aiden Hutchinson. They play really, really hard. They play action passes wide open. They like to play man coverage. The Titans are beating them all over the field. For a couple of things, there's some like, you know, there's just some things going on. You go, what do you mean they're eight? But then you realize, like, if you're always down, you know, that you can't run the ball against these guys. Like, the 22nd in yards per carry, there's like fifth in yards per game. You know what I mean? So in rushing. So it's one of those things where they are just such an offensive juggernaut. And when you watch, like, Ben Johnson's a computer science major. Like, dude's a genius. Like, This is a guy that I think at one point when he thought he was going to get fired from Miami, he had like a doomsday bug that he was going to put into the computer system to blow up. I mean, he never did, but he was like, it was like, he was one of those guys, you go, he was joking about it. But you're like, oh, like he can probably do that. You know what I mean? He's that kind of smart. So when you watch the intricacies of how subtle some of the things that he does, whether it's just the lineman splits or whether it's the motions and all the trick play, every play that they have is like every formation they go out of is like their base play, the reverse off of it. They have a trick play off of it. And they have a play action off of it. I mean, every single one. And it's uncanny to watch the same formation, the same motion, and they run a bunch of different stuff. But two or three times during the game, you'll go, oh, I already seen that. Oh, that was a different play. Oh, I can't imagine playing defense against those guys. So they're a lot of fun to watch. They're tough to defend against. The Packers are going to have to get to Jared Goff, particularly on the blind side. He doesn't move that well, we know. But you have to get him off his first read, and you have to get home. That usually means going through one of the guards or the running back, going through the tackles. Last week, Arden Key had a good game. But generally speaking, you think, you know, when Jahmyr Gibbs is in, can you blitz against him? Can you maybe get home with Kenny Clark versus their – I forgot his name, but their left guard? Some of those opportunities. But, you know, Frank Ragnow is an all-pro. Panay Sewell is really destroying people on the backside of the box. So they're doing some good stuff in the run game. Yeah. A lot of talent. I mean, they've earned the right with all the suffering they've had to have a lot of talent on that roster. And they got a lot of talent on that roster.
Yeah, I think on offense, Graham Glasgow, who you're mentioning, I think is the one I think you probably have to take advantage of. And on defense, I think Terrion Arnold, with his propensity to hold and you know, just still being a rookie, is probably the guy you have to attack there. They just don't have many holes. And if you can find anything to kind of latch onto, then you probably have to take it. So to your point, and maybe, you know, blitzing when Gibbs is in, not as much of a blitz pickup guy. So I think there's some things that you can lean on, but man, Detroit is super efficient. Jared Goff is an assassin from the pocket if you don't get him off of his spot. And everything that they do has intention and purpose to it. And it's just really, really difficult, especially when they have some of the physicality up front, just to kind of get them off of their game. To your point, their formula for success is getting ahead. And then, you know, it's one-dimensional for the offense, and their defense can pick on you more. If you can get Detroit in a similar sort of situation where you go up early and get a lead, and now they become a little bit more one-dimensional, and Gibbs and Montgomery aren't as big of a factor, to me, that's a great recipe for success, but obviously a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, no doubt. And they are, I mean, the thing about, like, their running backs, Jahmyr Gibbs is like watching the Tecmo Bowl. You know, you can't understand it. He's like him and Bijan Robinson last year and this year too. So like, I don't know what we're trying to tackle these guys. It's ridiculous. They eat on the backside of their offensive line. Like, whatever side they're running to, that backside's getting like 5-6 yards of movement on the backside B block. So they just they're just really, really good at the basic stuff. And then it's just really good at dressing everything else up. They make it look super easy. I think, you know, it's always an interesting question is, and you don't really have a choice, but, you know, would you prefer against a team like this to be up a lot and have to and make them throw 60 times knowing they can do, you know, with their receiving core and their tight ends, or do you want to keep close and try to sneak one away at the end because you wanted to play like a somewhat conservative game and then you think you can score on their defense, right? Like it's hard. I'm not like defensively, like they bite on play action. Anzalotti and Campbell, they bite hard on play action. There's crossers all open all over the place. They don't really have Aleem McNeil's a really good player, but they don't really have a pass rush anymore without Hutchinson there. Like none of those guys can throw fear into the hearts of our offensive linemen. And they love to play man on the back end. So like you just think you see opportunities to make plays, but just, you know, it's easy to see on film. It's easy to see where I'm sitting here on my couch, but you got to make a lot of plays to score with those guys. 33 points a game.
Yeah. I think Green Bay is going to put up points in this game, but yeah, it's not going to be easy no matter what. Again, to your point, I don't know that you want to get in a shootout. I don't know that like you want to stay super conservative because they can out physical you as well in that situation. So there's not a perfect formula, but Green Bay's got to figure out the right one. Green Bay's got to figure out that Dr. Strange, that one time where they can get that victory, whatever it might be, and just put that right game plan together. Mike, I appreciate your time as always. Always super insightful stuff, and I look forward to picking your brain week in and week out. Where can we find all of your work when you're not here on Packaday and on the Process to Perform channel?
Yeah, Black Party Podcast comes out twice a week. I have one coming out Wednesday night And you can check that out on the YouTube channel on Process to Perform. You can hit me up, Michael68 on Twitter, Process to Perform on Instagram. Andy, thanks for making time, man. Good talking to you.
Right back at you. Can't thank you enough. We'll talk to you next week. Again, you can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. You can find me at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. But for Mike and I, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Pack Go.